those specific problems. Because it can actually make quite a few worse. I would suggest that if some... what I didn't talk about today was non-motor fluctuations. We have identified that about 40 to 50% of people with Parkinson's, they have motor fluctuations. So you take the drug, it works for a while, then it wears off, you have to take the drug again. So you've got the on-off swings. Along with the off state, there are some dominant non-motor problems, such as pain, fatigue issues, sleepiness, and sometimes mood problems. Some people feel terribly, panic attacks can occur when they're off. And in these patients, by using drugs, dopaminergic drugs, which gives you a longer half-life, longer acting agents, if you soothe out the fluctuations, you'll be able to help a lot of those fluctuations, non-motor fluctuations. So dopamine drugs also have a key role, and we know some of them have an antidepressant effect too.
Okay, was there a question over this side?
Yes, thank you very much for your talk. We have an illness called Parkinson that has motor symptoms and non-motor system. Motor symptoms are characterized by a lack of dopamine. The other ones, we discovered that serotonin is lacking, perhaps, or other. What is, in fact, the fundamental reasons of this lack of dopamine, of serotonin, and all the different... Do we have an answer of that?
I wish I could answer that, but I think what we've now realized is that you might argue that if you look at 100 people with Parkinson's, not everybody will have sleep problems. Maybe 25 will. Amongst that group of 100, maybe 10 will have severe fatigue. Another 20 might have severe pain. In some, it'll overlap. We think that there is different rates of cell loss in the brain for reasons that are not clear in three different areas. One is the lower part of the brain, one is the limbic system, one is the cerebral cortex. And there is now pathological proof from that from Australian researchers, Glenda Halliday and others have shown that depending on which part, of which age you get the condition, your symptoms might be very different. So I think we know what's happening, but we still don't know what's causing it. That's unfortunately not known. But I think only after recognition you can address the cause. So I think we're there, and now we really need to address why is this, what we call heterogeneity between the expression of Parkinson's. Why is it some people are having sleep attacks, others are having major tremor, others are having problems with memory? That we don't know.
Yeah. Is the diet or the food the main cause of this?
Food? Did you say nutrition?
The nutrition.
No, I don't think there is any specific strong evidence to suggest that, to be honest. I'm sure Karen and Parkinson's UK have done some work on the nutrition side.
There's no study about characterizing different Parkinson patients with what they eat in a way.
Well, if anything, it's actually a condition that's conducive to what some would call a fast life because, you can smoke, apparently, and that can protect you from Parkinson's, although I don't believe that, but some people claim. You can have beer. A German study showed, not unsurprisingly, that beer is apparently protective because it contains niacin within it, and that has a protective effect. And more recently, in fact, this month's journal, Movement Disorders, carries a paper which says a coffee a day takes the dyskinesia away. So caffeine is good, and as I showed you, it's good for sleep attacks. So some things are good nutritionally, but I don't think there's any evidence to suggest that there's specific nutritional factor triggering Parkinson's.
Thank you very much.
I was going to ask, do you think there is a worry that by having, and I'm not, this is a slightly challenging to myself as well as yourself, by having so many features, non-motor features associated with Parkinson's, that a person with Parkinson's may avoid going to their doctor thinking everything is, I should go back to the Parkinson's nurse or the Parkinson's specialist, and GPs may become de-skilled and say, I know you've constipation, but this is out of my league, this is related to your Parkinson's. I know you're tired, this is out of my league, this is related to your Parkinson's.
Yeah, I think there is, but I guess, it's, sort of, if you look at the analogous condition and several other conditions, I mean, GPs have got quite good at managing, for instance, diabetes, for instance, you know, it has multifocal manifestations. I think it's a question of education and slowly getting them to understand that this is as much a core part of Parkinson's as is the motor syndrome. And in fact, some of them are treatable by simple remedies. I mean, if somebody has dribbling of saliva, you know, you can easily treat that with some ice in the mouth or with some atropine drops in the mouth, etc. I think that needs to be more translated down to primary care, and that's a challenge we have. And I think we need to get there. I think with Parkinson's UK and others, we should be able to do that.
Okay. Question over here, sir.
More than that, I've experienced people who have non-motor symptoms and they change dramatically from one extreme to the other. For instance, somebody who has driving and falling asleep and suddenly dropping off progresses to be insomnia.
I think what you're asking is what might be the changing pattern of these conditions.
That's what's happened with my wife.
Right. I mean, you know, one thing to remember with many of these symptoms, as I said, they can be modified by medications quite substantially. So what we've seen, again, there is not much progression data known. So if somebody came to me today and said, and I diagnosed this patient has a lot of fatigue today, if that person asked me, how am I going to be in 10 years' time in relation to my fatigue, I can't give a direct answer because we haven't had those long-term studies with the specific non-motor symptoms. But with sleepiness, we have. With excessive daytime sleepiness, it seems to be a progressive problem. So if somebody has that phenotype, which I showed, where they suddenly fall asleep, it's likely to get more and more. If it changes to insomnia, it means two things. It means either the Parkinson's has affected the sleep-wake cycle area, so it has changed that way, or drugs are modifying the sleep-wake cycle, because some drugs for Parkinson's are well known to cause insomnia.
And you mentioned hypnosis, I think, on one of the slides. Does that help with the sleep problem?
Which one? Sorry, coming in?